All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum
freedom. Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome once again to Read Rothbard, the Read Rothbard podcast, readrothbard.com. My name is Daniel, and with me is Robert, and this is going to be a Robert-centric flex your nerd core muscle show, because we're going to talk Marvel Universe, Civil War, and some YouTube shit. What do you say, Robert? How you doing?
Man, I'm living life, loving it. Everything's awesome in Roberttown. I was talking to you earlier, and I was just shooting the shit about some dumbass shit, and you were like, man, this stuff is gold. We got to record this. So for the listeners, you get to hear some reacting and comments to some YouTube videos I've seen throughout the week. So enjoy that.
Yeah, and how have you been able to go and see YouTube videos? Is it that data cap out thing, and you're just like, all right, download for approximately 45 minutes for a 1 minute video?
Yeah, it goes in fits and spurts, but I'm past the cap, so it's all throttled down to like 56k speeds. And yeah, you start up a video, and you can really only start up two at a time, or else YouTube kind of caps out and says you're not responding to what we're trying to say, or vice versa. So You can load up two videos, and yeah, it loads up in like half an hour, 2 hours, depending on how long the video is. You know, it's fine. I'm doing other stuff, doing my thing, and I come back and I can watch a video. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. If you've been following kind of the ANCAP-y world of YouTube, there are a bunch of good ANCAPs on YouTube. There's a guy named Anarchy Ball. There's a guy named Larkin Rose. There's a guy named That Guy T. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of them. And they got together and contributed to this video, which was questions for status, ANCAP questions for status. And a couple of statists have responded. And then there have been some anarchist response to those videos. So it'll go back and forth for a while. But what I was telling Daniel before the show was, let me see if I can get this correct, because I was just kind of generalizing it to Daniel. But I believe the guy's name is like St. Croix. He has like this kind of...
Like that fancy water?
What's that?
That fancy water or that fancy island? Isn't that like St. Croix? Isn't that like where all those capitalists go when they're trying to hide their money from the government taxation?
So I'm probably getting... those evil tax haven people. Anyway, it might be St. Prue or St. Croix. Anyway, he's got a kind of a like a red cross, and then it looks kind of like a, I don't know, like a crusader on his icon. Let me find it. This is awesome content. But,
no, it's so good.
You know, you don't want me to prepare. Yeah. Fine. Should probably have been prepared for this, but I wasn't. Anyway,
I
so he
see
responded.
A thing where, okay, yeah, go ahead.
Anyway, so he responded to basically, I think, Anarchy Ball was the first video that I saw responding to his response. I didn't actually go back and watch the original response. It's a really long response. But his, basically, his, the responses were, you know, Anarchy Ball would ask a question like, you know, government has killed 250 million people in acts of democide in the 20th century. And his response was a baby crying sound with the image of a baby. And so that's the kind of like level of rhetoric you can expect. But I kind of give the guy props for even responding at all. But he makes status look like real pieces of shit. One question was, if taking 100% of someone's income is slavery, at what percentage does it become not slavery? And the guy said 99.999%. So you could take 99.999% of someone's income, leaving them with, I don't know, a few pennies, and you know, that's not slavery. That's totally fine. So then this other statist responded to the whole argument, basically responding to this St. Croix or St. Croix. I need to find this, get this right. But he responded to it, and he's a statist, but he even said, hey, you're making us look bad. you sound like a sociopathic piece of crap. He just said he just felt terrible watching the statist responses, because he was a guy that loves democracy, apparently, and listening to another statist try and refute the anarchist questions, respond to the anarchist questions, just made him sick. St. Clair. St. Clair is the name of the guy, S-A-I-N-T-C-L-A-R-E. And then the video of the other statist responding to that is Canadian Beaver. And then also Sargon of Akkad, he's kind of a famous YouTuber, he made a status response video. And that guy T did a live response along with the that libertarian cartoonist guy, can't think of his name. And then also Shane Killian has responded. And that video is up on Shane's channel and on Anarchy Ball's channel. And I recommend all those videos to just get an idea of some of the arguments back and forth, the level of discourse, if you could even call it that, from St. Clair. Sargon, he kind of flirts with libertarianism. He doesn't think that there should be laws against drugs and that sort of thing, but then he'll contradict himself in the next sentence. And, you know, it's just a very unprincipled response, as you would expect. So it's been interesting. The videos are quite long. The Shane Killian and Sargon of Akkad response is an hour and 34 minutes. The statist responding to the St. Clair video is like a half hour. But it's all good stuff, all really good stuff. I was hoping, you know, Larkin is famous for his mirror project, which is essentially asking all these kind of logical questions. And no matter what answer you give, eventually you'll find out there's some cognitive dissonance in your thinking. And several of his questions were featured on the videos. And I was surprised, but a couple of his questions got answered. I didn't think that they were answered well. In fact, one of the statists, totally aside from that, but Julie Borowski is one of the featured questioners. And the St. Clair guy, instead of answering your question, he's just like, ooh, I don't like her. Ooh, she's weak. I just don't like her. And moving on. Like, okay. Well, that's what you expect. So that's like my not YouTube answer. Report.
I've liked that Sargon guy on a couple of things, but I'm a little bit surprised that he's still a bad statist. I did see a little meme-y thing by Anarchy Ball about Sargon. I'm trying to find it right now, and I'll post it below if I do find it, but it calls him out on one of the things that he says that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Sargon, he's kind of famous for, I think, a lot of like atheist content and anti-SJW, social justice warrior type content.
Which is all good. That's all great stuff.
Sure, yeah, it's all good stuff. But, yeah, his status defense leaves quite a bit to be desired. But, you know, maybe they're coming around.
Yeah, I know you like this Shane Killian guy. He's like your buddy.
Yeah, he does some really good responses. In fact, if you watch this Killian's response to Sargon, at one point he loses it. He loses his shit, and he just starts screaming because he's just fed up and sick of, because Sargon just uses a lot of the same old tired responses that have been debunked over and over again, and Sargon is just like showing his laziness by not even looking up any of these answers and using these arguments that have just been refuted over and over and over again. And it's like, how many, Killian just gets frustrated. He's like, how many times do we have to refute this argument? Just a million times. So, yeah, Killian's really good. I know you have your issues with him, but I, as I've said before, I'm sure you probably agree with like 95% of what he says. So, but you know, watch it or don't watch it. But he's very much an ANCAP, and I think he's good.
You know, he's an ANCAP except for that whole vaccination thing, right?
No, I think that fully falls in line with being an ANCAP.
The forced vaccinations? That's totally ANCAP.
No, that's not what he said. He never once said anybody should be forced to be vaccinated. He was just pointing out his belief that in order to create like a herd immunity, people should or ought to voluntarily vaccinate themselves.
And anyone who doesn't is a fucking murderer and is an asshole and should be charged with some kind of crime and all this stuff. He says that stuff.
I don't think he said that. If he
maybe
said
not
that
directly
now,
in the video,
again.
But in the comments below, he says shit like that. Like, he goes off the range, man. He goes crazy in the comments, like immediately to just terrible shit.
Now, they are just words, you know, sticks and stones and all, so I guess it's not a violation of the NAAP, but he's advocating, I think he's advocating that not being vaccinated is a form of aggression against others.
So the Walter Block Typhoid Mary situation?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So you put him in the same vault as Block, but you seem to have a fairly positive view of Block.
Well, Block's not a dick about it, and what's his name? Killian. Like, if you read the comments, he is nasty to people when he's responding to them with just normal questions like, hey, you know, what about evidence to the contrary? And he's like, you're a fucking baby murderer. Like, that's his response.
Well, not to defend Killian and his responses to some of the chat messages that I have never read. But I will say this. The guy has an autistic child, and there may be a fair amount of ex post facto justification in his emotional feelings about the subject.
Right, because I had this thing affect me, so if you dare say that I'm a bad father and cause this, then I'm going to, you know, have some kind of a mental self-defense mechanism and get all emotional about it.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's speculation on my part, but that seems to be a possible factor in how he's reacting. He seems to be fairly level-headed most of the time, but he can get very much fired up. And me, coming from listening to guys like Tom Woods, and who I wish would get fired up, listening to Killian from time to time get fired up is actually a breath of fresh air. And I appreciate it when he gets emotional, because I get emotional about a lot of these statist arguments, and because people are being murdered every day by academicites. Well, and in response to that, I would say, would you be okay with yourself being murdered? I don't think you would. I think this is obviously a disingenuous piece of shit response. And it just shows that you're like a sociopath that doesn't give a shit about anybody.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, that's the YouTube report, everybody. And I did find the photo Sargon thing from Anarchy Ball, where he's talking about, Sargon says, see, I'm not one of those authoritarian liberals who's driven by emotional thinking. I'm what you call a classical liberal. Basically, I'm a rationalist who believes in the value of personal and economic and political liberties. Well, accepting minimum wage and anti-discrimination laws, of course, they protect my feelings.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. That'll be posted below.
I'm not a huge, huge Sargon supporter. I have seen a couple of his videos, and I considered subscribing, but then for whatever reason, I saw something that I didn't really appreciate, and I chose not to. So that's where I stand on that guy.
Yeah, so you're kind of doing to him what I did with Killian, right? Like, I got a distaste for this guy, so no thanks.
Well, I mean, I guess, except I am subscribed to Killian. I see what you're saying. Although, well, sure. Yeah, okay, I'll disagree with you. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a matter of degree, but sure. You know. Anyway, that's the YouTube report. Woohoo!
YouTube report.
YouTube report. Maybe that'll be a regular feature. You know, we should actually get these on YouTube. I think that would be a good thing. I'm just trying to figure out how I would accomplish it, because there's so many things I'm trying to do right now, and it's. I think I was telling you the other day that I just feel very disjointed and not having a focus or direction, because I got so many things in front of me and so little time to focus on it, and just running in too many different directions at the same time.
Which
I'm drawn and quartering myself.
Yeah,
one
I've been
the,
better about that
preferred
lately,
method.
But I struggle with that as well.
Yeah, well, hey, let's do get focused. Let's do the Marvel Universe Civil War, because we talked about that in the past, not on this podcast, but you and I together, and you were saying that I should see it, and I finally did on the airplane. So I don't know if they cut out any of the juicy bits, but I did see it. But since it's kind of your wheelhouse, why don't you take it away?
All right. So I'm going to say that this is our Marvel Civil War / Minority Report episode, and I'll explain what I mean by that.
Excellent.
There are multiple NAP/ libertarian type issues at work in this content. In the Civil War world, originally adapted from the comic book that came out in like the mid 2000s, you have the Patriot, the American Patriot, Captain America, the military soldier guy, who you might think is more of the authoritarian, take orders, leave orders, give orders kind of guy. But they actually turn him into the hey, no oversight, make our own decisions, dude. And you have Tony Stark, who is the industrialist entrepreneur type, although I would argue he's not like a pure entrepreneur in that he, I don't know if it's ever explained how he makes all his money, but it's established well in the Marvel Universe as well as the Marvel Cinematic Universe that Stark Industries has multiple contracts and very friendly rubbing shoulders with government and generals and that sort of thing. The very first Iron Man movie features Stark selling weapons to the U.S. military, and he only gets, like, upset when he finds out that his company has secretly also been arming the other side, the quote-unquote terrorists. So he's totally fine with this authoritarian U.S. military murder, but he's not okay with arming the people defending themselves or whatever, depending on who you're ideologically lined up with. If you see these people as, I mean, the movie goes on and demonizes them and shows them killing people, so, eh, but it is, you know, their home, and the U.S. military is an invading force. So that might be an interesting topic all on its own. However, okay, so we've got Stark as this billionaire industrialist playboy guy selling arms to the military. And in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, in the Avengers and the Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, both instances, there were, like, big catastrophic events. So in Avengers 1, there are these Chitauri invasion, which are these, like, alien beings that Loki, the Thor's brother, the Norse god of mischief, he opens this portal into space, and in come flying all these Chitauri, these aliens. And there's this big invasion, this big fight, and a bunch of people die, right? The Avengers do what they can, try to destroy this invasion, prevent this invasion, but there are casualties. In Age of Ultron, Stark essentially creates Ultron, essentially invents the guy, and then he goes on and turns into evil, and then he has this evil plan to wipe out all human beings on the planet by lifting up this, like, city slash country, this, like, tiny European little country, I guess, called Sokovia in the Age of Ultron, lifts it up into the air, and then he's going to drop it, and then basically wiping out all the people and then creating this massive dust cloud and covering the Earth and all that sort of thing, like a Matrix scenario. Anyway, so Stark kind of feels guilty for creating Ultron. So he thinks that they should have some sort of a government oversight over their actions and whatnot. I don't really buy it. Seems like a kind of a, whatever. Anyway, I bought it well enough to enjoy the movie. Anyway, so in the acts of the movie starts out, and the Avengers are on an assignment to prevent Crossbones from stealing a thing and killing a bunch of people. And in the event, in the aftermath of that, and trying to prevent that from happening, the Avengers actually kill some people. So they get called into the principal's office from General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross, the guy that goes after the Incredible Hulk all the time, with tanks and planes and guns, and presumably all kinds of innocent people get hurt and murdered for him chasing down the Hulk all the time. And in canon, he created, or at least contributed to the creation of this creature called the Abomination, who the Hulk fought in the Incredible Hulk movie. And all kinds of people got hurt, killed, property damaged, all over the place. So here comes this pot calling the kettle black, saying, look at you guys. In fact, it's worse than that. He's this guy that actively contributed to this thing getting created, and then he's taking the task of these people who are trying to prevent further casualties from happening. If anybody, he should have just taken the task Stark for creating Ultron, I suppose. But so their argument is, look at all these casualties, look at all these incidents you've been in. And one issue I have is nobody at any time says, yes, there's a bunch of casualties. How many casualties would there have been had we done nothing? Nobody ever says that. That was really frustrating. So anyway, Captain America says, so you just want to hand over our decision-making to the United Nations, giving us, you know, one level of bureaucracy. What would happen if, you know, we waste time responding to an event, seeing if we get their permission, or if they send us to do a thing that we don't agree with? What, you know, how does it make us any better at what we're doing? Stark says, no, we've got all this power. We need to be reined in. We need to have some sort of accountability, some sort of oversight. And it's not clear, I mean, it's a comic book movie. It's not clear if the people whose property is damaged and the people whose lives were lost, the families of the lives lost, blame the Avengers. I mean, there's never any, like, you're sued for doing this, X, Y, or Z. In fact, that's one thing the Marvel movies don't kind of do very well is explain how the world feels about the Avengers. I mean, how the audience feels about the Avengers, I think that they think they're heroes, that they are doing what they can to prevent loss of life, to save people's lives from these villains. So anyway, there's this ideological split between Captain America and Iron Man, where Iron Man wants more bureaucracy, more central authority, central control, and Captain America's like, no, not going to do that. So see what else happens. Then the whole movie kind of revolves around the Winter Soldier and this guy, Baron Zemo, whose family was killed in Sokovia from Ultron, and his goal is to create a whole bunch of infighting to reduce the effectiveness of the Avengers. And I guess in a sort of a big revenge plot, it's a very convoluted and, but you know, if you suspend disbelief, it's like pretty impressive, I guess, as this one normal guy who just used a whole lot of planning and strategy to take down, you know, these superpowered god type creatures. So on that sense, I think he's a fairly believable villain. He's probably one of the better villains, in my opinion. If you really break it down and you get into the nitty-gritty of each scene, yeah, it's fairly unbelievable, but it's also unbelievable that there are, like, Norse gods of thunder that are running around, so whatever. So there's that whole discussion of, and I think on the libertarian side of things, I come down in on the Captain American side. I always have, before I was a libertarian, before I was an anarchist. I read Civil War back in 2006, 2007, whatever it was, and just instantly sided with Captain America. Just like I was watching Samurai Champloo yesterday, and I was instantly siding with Mugen, who's this anti-authoritarian guy who's like, you have no right to tell me to do anything, buddy.
Have that anarchist streak in you even back in the day when you were a lefty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember back in the day being just a kid. Being some, you know, teenager, 10, 11, 12 years old, 13 years old, and some teacher would tell me to do something, and I'd be like, why? You have no right to tell me to do anything. And some adult would tell me to do something, and like, why? No? I've always been very much anti-establishment, anti-authoritarian, so it's probably no surprise that I jumped right on the anarchist train. So there's that civil war, and we could get into more of what happens, I suppose, but it's not super relevant. There's a big battle where at an airport that I thought was awesome. There's where Captain America and Falcon escape. I think it was Captain America and Falcon. Was it Black Widow? I forget. No, it was Falcon again. Yeah, Falcon. No, Winter Soldier and Captain America. They escape, and then Iron Man chases after them. And anyway, there's a big showdown, and pretty cool. It gets emotional and personal. So in that Civil War, and Marvel is also currently doing a Civil War II in the comic books, and I'll briefly lay this out, pretty simple concept, and then we can discuss any and all of what I have said so far, Daniel. In Civil War II, there's a split between Iron Man and Carol Danvers, who is Captain Marvel, and it centers around this character, who is an Inhuman, that has the ability to essentially predict the future. So it's your Minority Report scenario. And
like the Tom Cruise movie?
Yes, the Tom Cruise adaptation of Philip K. Dick movie, or a book, sorry. I think it's Philip K. Dick, wasn't it? Minority Report? I could be wrong. Anyway.
Yeah, somebody will fact check us.
Yeah, fact check us. Some famous science fiction dude wrote that book. Anyway, so yeah, that movie, and in the Civil War II world, there is a character that can essentially determine whether or not a crime is going to be committed. And Iron Man, in this instance, is like, no, you can't punish someone for something they haven't done yet, regardless of how accurate you think that this person who's telling you this thing is or not. Carol Danvers is like, are you kidding me? These people are probably going to get killed. We need to just prevent this. We'll lock these people up. We'll jail them preemptively, and then they won't be able to commit these crimes. My issue with all this is, let's say you have this character, or precogs, or whatever, this Inhuman guy that can predict the future. So say he comes up and says, hey, this guy's going to kill this guy. tomorrow. I don't know how far into the future his visions go or whatever. And I don't know how far the visions go in Minority Report. I remember seeing the movie. I've seen the movie a couple times, but I don't think it's specified how far into the future their powers can see. But anyway, you don't need to go. Let's say you're a cop and you get this information that this guy's going to commit this crime. You don't have to go and arrest that guy. All you have to do is give him a call, go knock on his door, go talk to the guy and say, hey, we got this information, you're going to commit this crime. We're now watching you. We'll be watching the person you're going to commit the crime against. And, you know, that's all you need to do.
And they'll be made aware of it's going to happen?
Right. Right. Be aware that it is likely going to happen. And that person would take that in as new information and change their behavior accordingly. They would know that they're being watched. There's a case in the comic books where Carol Danvers, the Ms. Marvel character, is like, no, we need to jail this person. And the people that she's jailing are like, what are you talking about? I have no idea. I don't even know this person that you're saying I killed. And in fact, that's the plot of the Minority Report. The guy's like, I don't even know who you're talking about. Why would I kill this person? Don't even know who you're talking about. So all you have to do is say, well, this is the person. You know, this is where they live. You don't go near them. Or, you know, this is new information that you can use to not commit this crime now, as opposed to jailing them for nothing. Anyway, so that's my issue with that whole thing. You can solve it with a post-it note. You don't have to. You don't have to kill the guy to stop it. You don't have to jail the guy to stop it. All you have to do is make him aware that this crime is, you know, likely to occur, and we have this information that you might do it. And now that you know, you're far less likely to do it. So,
knowing is half the battle.
Indeed. Or even if you have, even if you're like this person, you intend to kill somebody. Now you know that you're being watched. You know that the person you're going to kill or intend to kill is being watched. So there's all kinds of ways in which you could intervene without violating the NAP to something somebody hasn't done yet. So there's been a big criticism of the Civil War II of saying that nobody is on Carol Danvers' side. Nobody agrees with her. They think she's dumb. In the Civil War I, there were a whole bunch of authoritarians, statists, who were like, yes, totally agree with Tony Stark. He's totally right. You got all these people running around with all this power. You need oversight, blah, blah, blah. Whereas I was instantly, what are you talking about? How does adding a layer of bureaucracy change anything? These people are going
right,
to question the
Watchers,
their own judgment.
Wouldn't the Watchers just have, like, all this power then, you know, sort of transferred to them?
Yeah, you're just changing the decision-making from one fallible person to another fallible person.
Yeah, people are bad, so let's have a government made up of people are bad, so let's have a government made up of people are bad.
yeah, exactly, this infinite chain that somehow, somewhere, somehow gets good for some reason. Yeah, it's I don't see any of the logic involved. I think it's all bad. So any of those points you want to discuss in further detail, Daniel? I just kind of like vomited a whole bunch of words at you. But that's kind of my take on the whole civil thing.
Well, you know, it is your world or universe, if you will. I don't have a whole lot to add. Just my, you know, somewhat naivete to the universe, you know, a big gap in my history of it. You know, I was a fan when I was a kid in the comic books and whatnot, but I hadn't seen a whole lot of it since then. Was, you know, to your point, you're saying, you know, Stark is this entrepreneurial guy, and he's kind of like this, he was a screw-off for a long time, playboy, kind of doing his own thing, making his own rules,
yep,
playing by his own rules, not following the leader, you know, anti-authoritarian in that respect. And
mm-hmm.
So it made me think that he would be the guy in Civil War to say, you know what, fuck this oversight, fuck that. You know, we are, you know, doing the best for what we're, you know, trying to accomplish. We're trying to help people. And, you know, what, like to your question, what would have happened had we done nothing? You know, more people would have died. And I thought that Captain America, being this, you know, red, white, and blue patriotic dude, would be all about, like, oh, you know, the government is good, therefore we must do what the government says. So I was a bit surprised to see it reversed. Now, you know the history of the characters far more than I do, so you know, you can certainly make the argument that, based on their history, that it is correct, you know, how they were doing it. And so that makes me think of Stark as more of this Elon Musk, crony capitalist type guy who's super cozy with government
yep.
and all that stuff.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, so I don't know if you've seen the Captain America trilogy movies. You've just seen the Civil War, right? This is Captain America 3, Civil War.
I saw the first one, sort of halfway watched it, and he was, you know, super soldier fighting Nazis, so that was all rah, rah, rah.
Yeah,
go America.
So that's kind of like the arc of the Marvel Cinematic Universe Captain America. In the very beginning, he's this wimpy little guy who just wants to fight in the war. He just wants to serve his country, just wants to be the good patriot. So he volunteers for the super soldier program and, you know, gets turned into Captain America. And then he is instantly used as this propaganda tool for the war. And he's kind of a little bit disillusioned. They got him on, like, this USO tour slash selling war bonds. And he's like, what's this? This isn't what I signed up for. They're like, yeah, you're much more useful as a propaganda piece than as, like, a soldier on a battlefield. So he kind of starts a little bit questioning it. Then he fights the Red Skull, and, you know, they have a big battle, and he gets frozen for, like, you know, 50 years, 60 years. And as, you know, as time passes, that number of years he'll have been frozen for will keep getting increased. But then, in Captain America 2, you know, he's been thawed out, and he gets privy to this massive police state type of apparatus where they have these helicarriers, which are these giant floating battleships, which is what S.H.I.E.L.D. has. And I've got cows running down the road. Kind of interesting. these flying helicarriers, this is just bringing me back to my high school days, flying helicarriers that are floating around, and Nick Fury, played by Sam Jackson, the great Sam Jackson, is basically saying that we're developing these helicarriers, and they are going to be able to target, you know, hundreds and thousands of people at any given time, and then just instantly kill them from the sky. And Captain America's like, whoa, what's going on here? This is not what I fought for. So he was under the impression, you know, that we were fighting for, you know, liberty and peace and freedom. So he basically bought into that, you know, that propaganda. And so that's kind of the awakening of his character. So in that sense, and it also has to do with, you know, Bucky Barnes is the Winter Soldier, and he's, you know, his best friend, and he sees Bucky Barnes as being this tool of this evil organization, Hydra, to basically help in their bid to take over the world and what have you. And Rogers is like, you know, you're making this massive police state organization. What happens if somebody bad gets a hold of it? And Nick Fury's like, what are you talking about? That would never happen. There's all kinds of protections against that. So then, of course, that's exactly what happens. It's revealed right. that Hydra has infiltrated the government. Oh, no, there's a bad person in government. Can you even imagine that? So that's kind of like the evolution. I know I've said that word a couple times. But for me, if you follow that line of movies, I think it's very understandable where Captain America's position is in Civil War and how it seems. It makes perfect sense that he distrusts authority. He distrusts these massive machinations and layers of bureaucracy and other people making decisions for other people and yada, yada, yada.
So would you say that he's more of a reset-the-system constitutionalist, limited government type by the third movie here?
It's hard to put philosophical principles on a fictional character that's just alive in this movie. I would definitely say that, yeah, he would be more the libertarian minarchist type, that maybe the government has a role to play in, like, defense, maybe the objectivist type character. Definitely very much a pro-freedom, pro-liberty guy, even if he's not fully principled about that.
All right, so maybe Founding Fathers material, that kind of thing?
Probably.
Yeah, like the alleged core principles of the country, you know, the freedom and liberty lip service
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's all terrible. But for a comic book character, it's a bit of a swing from being a massive propaganda tool of this authoritarian regime, machination state, you know, Leviathan, to being at least recognizing it a little bit for what it is, or at least rejecting a lot of what it's standing for and what it's doing, if mm-hmm. not outright being principled against it entirely. So,
yeah, interesting. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the they're going to create this powerful police state apparatus that, you know, they trust the people who are implementing it, but then it could fall into the wrong hands, and then, of course, it does. It reminds me of what everyone was doing with Obama, saying, oh, you know, or after 9/11, like, they need all these powers, right? Patriot Act and NDAA
yeah.
and the Extraordinary Rendition and Guantanamo and all that stuff. And they're like, oh, you know, they need it to, like, protect us, keep us safe, but, you know, it'll never be used against us. And now
right.
a guy like Trump comes along, and now all these same people who are like, rah, 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 Obama's just doing his job, now they're, like, scared shitless that Trump's going to get a hold of it because they think he's a madman. But then the other half of the country thinks that Hillary is a madman. So, you know.
Right. So how do you like your choice of statist, as I've asked before,
yeah.
and I'll ask again?
Yeah, it's funny how you see a lot of people saying, I don't really like either one of them, but, you know, I'm going to do the lesser evil or whatever, which is not my choice.
Right. So one more thing in relating to this, in relating to, like, the Minority Report style thing slash government is horrific. Today in the news, the Trump of the East, that's in quotation marks, I don't know who said that, but that's what's here on my screen. The article is in Newsweek, and it says Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, is that how you say it? Compares drug crackdown to the Holocaust. And he likened himself to Adolf Hitler and said that he would be happy to slaughter millions of drug addicts, comparing his crackdown on drugs to the Holocaust. There have been people who have spoken out about his extrajudicial killings, that is, just murdering people without a court trial or anything like that. As if even if there was a court trial, it'd be necessarily, I mean, are you kidding me? Killing somebody for doing something to their own bodies is ridiculous. The actual quote is, Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. Now there are 3 million drug addicts in the Philippines. I'd be happy to slaughter them. So you've got a Minority Report situation going on here where he has admitted happily murder. So there's the famous, you know, what if or would you question, you know, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler to prevent all the atrocities? Well, you've got a situation like that right now. You've got a guy who has the machines of government at his disposal, who has claimed, has stated his intent to murder more people. So, and then there's, in the response to this from this unnamed Jewish groups in the United States say, Duarte owes the victims of the Holocaust an apology for his rhetoric. He doesn't owe an apology to the families of all the people he's murdered. I just think it's...
Or is about to murder.
Or is about to murder. No, he doesn't need to apologize for that. Just for mentioning, just for likening what he's doing to what Hitler did to the Holocaust. Okay. Tone deaf much?
Yeah, wow. That's like the BLM stuff, you know, Black Lives Matter. Like they're only concerned when it deals with their group, you know?
Yeah.
If it's not about them specifically, then it's racist and and whatever, you know, they don't give a shit about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
one of the things you just said where the precog thing, where you're saying that, you know, Duarte is like a Hitler, and do you go back in time and stop him? I mean, you could make the argument that any level of government is guaranteed violence or murder against people. You know, you just don't know who specifically the victims are going to be. Because, like,
right.
in the past we said every law is enforced with a gun, right? Every law is a raised gun. And it reminds me of a Gustave de Molinari quote where he says, anarchy is no guarantee that some people won't kill, injure, or kidnap, or defraud, or steal from others. But government is a guarantee that some will.
Yeah. Good quote. Yeah, and the crimes of anarchy are all guesswork. I mean, the number of dead on one side of the argument and on the other, it's ridiculous. So...
Yeah, the number of dead from voluntary interactions is pretty small. Like, Kevorkian might be one of the few people who's involved in that.
Yeah, or drug overdoses, I suppose, or what have you. But that's people doing that to themselves. So I guess that wouldn't even be an interaction.
The use of violence to accomplish their goal is not the free market. You know, that's not anarchism, so... That wouldn't even fall into that because that's an involuntary situation. You know, obviously the person receiving the violence is not signing up for that unless they're in a boxing match or MMA.
Right, and there have been some murders or some deaths from that, but it's never. I mean, we understand. I mean, human beings understand when things are voluntarily done and agreed to. I mean, people have died in the boxing ring. They have died in MMA. They've died in all kinds of voluntary combat. Or voluntary sporting events, that sort of thing. And there's never any kind of, you know, repercussion or legal action taken against the person that killed them because people understand that it's a voluntary situation and that the person knew the risk and he voluntarily did that. But we don't seem to do that with drugs or all these other things that are criminalized. Like, I sent you this article, and I don't really know how, you know, how it all goes down. So... people are, you know, entering the country, and there's a whole list of things that were confiscated, okay? just basically seized. They use the word seized, which I use the word steal. So, and there's
by
no...
How are they confiscated? By whom?
Okay, these Customs and Border Protection is what the article lists. U.S.
Okay,
customs
so these are people coming into the country and they go through customs?
Yeah, people coming into the country, going through customs, and they're just having people things stolen. Now, none of this is listing any kind of context. So, for example, if you had like an AK-47 with like lit sticks of dynamite sticking out of it, and then you also had like a box of Lego, like in the butt of the gun or something, and then they took that, they'll list, you know, the dynamite, the gun, and the box of Lego separately. And then you're going, well, why would they steal from a box of Lego? And you go, I don't know. But I can't imagine you could explain away all of these that way. So there's all these cars that they stole. There's some Tylenol. There are apples. There are headphones. There are some DVD box sets. There's some avocados. There's a Bass Pro Shop cap, Beachbody DVDs, some beef empanadas, some birth control pills. Somebody's birth control pills, they just stole those. Okay. Some bodybuilding supplements. Why? Some passports. Okay, maybe they're forged passports, doesn't say. Captain America.
Wouldn't it be great to not need those at all? I mean,
right, absolutely. This is here Captain America, so I don't know if that's where he really is. Probably not. A purse, Chanel purse. I don't know why they could even need to steal somebody's purse, somebody's earrings, somebody's iPhone case. Cheese. I don't know if there's some prohibition on somebody bringing cheese into the country. There's a whole bunch of cocaine, which I suppose that's illegal. Coca-Cola, though, I don't think is. There's a Dell laptop. The list of things is so varied and wide. It's like, well, if I walked through customs with any of this stuff, would it just get stolen? Probably not. There's probably some story going along here, but it's just bizarre. Disney Baby Einstein DVDs, MASH TV series DVDs, Star Trek The Next Generation DVDs, e-cigarette vapor cartridges. It goes on and on. There's a couple more really ridiculous ones here. Ham. There's a ham sandwich that they just stole. Somebody's ham sandwich. Probably somebody wanted to eat that.
After all the trouble that the free market went to create that ham sandwich, the generation or two of people creating all the machinery and capital equipment to slaughter the ham and get it delivered to the deli on the corner, and then somebody just steals it.
Yeah. They just
what a waste.
Absolute waste. I mean, the guy probably just ate it, I guess, but he probably just stole it. Some ibuprofen? Why? Why would you steal somebody's ibuprofen? A Lego set? A Louis Vuitton bag? All kinds of Louis Vuitton stuff? Why?
A lot of this stuff, Robert, a lot of this stuff sounds like it's either something that could be potentially counterfeit, such as the Chanel or the Louis Vuitton, or the DVDs, or a controlled substance. So there are certain types of Tylenol that are legal in other areas but not legal here. So I'm sure they have some regulation or rule on the books that gives them some, quote-unquote, gives them some authority to confiscate these things. And I imagine that would be one of the reasons why, like, these types of items are showing up on the list. Granted, they should not have such an authority.
They're talking about, they're essentially saying we're trying to stop the smuggling of these things. So is their argument that I went on vacation and I bought some knockoff Louis Vuitton bag? Are they saying that they are somehow saving me by stealing it from me? Or I'm going to resell this one Louis Vuitton bag? Is that the argument?
Well, I think they're saying that, they're slapping your hand saying, hey, you shouldn't have bought this. And,
I shouldn't support this person who I made a voluntary purchase and they made a voluntary sale.
Yeah. And tell your friends, hey, I bought this bag and it got stolen by the government. So don't try to buy one yourself and bring it back.
But here's some more things.
They're going viral. Social. It's social media, baby.
Social media. Get the word out there. Don't engage in voluntary transactions. All right. So micro SD cards, just various random ones. There's a 2-gigabyte one. Here's a 32-gigabyte one. Just stealing stuff. A bunch of Nike stuff, a pack of envelopes, some packing tape. Get rid of that illegal packing tape. Plants for planting, a plastic piggy bank, some playing cards, okay, a Pokemon ball, pork rinds, a pot holder, why? Pumpkin seeds, let's see here, Rolex, somebody stole somebody's Rolex,
Was it a Folex or a Rolex?
There's a Rolex. It says Rolex. It doesn't say fake Rolex. Doesn't say counterfeit. There are some things that are denoted as counterfeit. But here's a Rolex Bellini, a Rolex Oyster watch. Let's see here. What else?
Now, the food ones, some of the food items, like driving down to California, you know, you cross the border from Oregon, and there's a big sign that says, like, Apple quarantine area or something like that.
Yeah, don't bring this into here because of it might be carrying some disease that could affect the local fauna or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of a legit thing, right? I mean, it would be handled in a different way in a free market, in an anarchist society.
Yes. Yes.
So it's not to say that everything the government does is necessarily, like, not something that's needed. It's just done in a shitty way.
Yes, I agree with you there. Now, some of these things are legitimate or would be legitimate in the ANCAP society. They'd be handled by the property owners, though, not some gang of thugs. A Skittles bag. Smurf action figures. Okay, here's one. Sodium chloride, just table salt. Okay. Somebody's table salt. Let's see here. Okay, here's my favorite stuff here. This is what they do. Now, I don't know if you could even legitimately find any way to defend this. It says, U.S. currency concealed in a handbag. And then there's another one, U.S. currency concealed in a guest bag. U.S. currency concealed in a purse. And U.S. currency concealed in a Mickey Mouse bag. So when they say concealed, does that just mean in a thing? Because you can't just, I mean, nobody just carries around dollar bills in their hand. So U.S. currency concealed in a wallet? I mean, what are we talking about here? It doesn't say counterfeit currency. It just means you got some money in a bag, and we're just going to steal it. I mean, try and defend that if you can.
Like in a hidden compartment or something? Or I know there's certain restrictions on how much cash you're supposed to be able to have on you. Like, I think it's $10,000, something like that, without declaring it. I don't know why.
So you think that's probably what we're talking about here?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You think that's what we're probably talking about here? We're talking about a large mass of cash that for some arbitrary reason you're not supposed to or allowed to have?
Yeah, no, they're not even like denoting the amount. They're just saying some currency concealed in some item.
Right.
So, is that general? Yeah,
it's very general. All it says is U.S. currency concealed in gray guest bag. So it doesn't say, hey, we found $500,000 stuffed into somebody's pants or something. And even then, I would say, well, don't steal that guy's money. But I see what you're saying in that they've got some regulation on slaves aren't allowed to carry X amount of dollars. So,
or put X amount of dollars in the bank or carry around X amount of dollars.
Here's one.
Or gift card.
Right. So here's on that, here's the one that they stole. Wells Fargo cashier's check. For $50,000, they stole it. You're not supposed to be able to carry on cashier's checks?
Well, I think they say cash or cash equivalents, and I guess that would be a cash equivalent.
Wow. So this is why I wouldn't want to travel. And this is just ridiculous.
You know, this is the one upside to a Bitcoin-type situation that I see. And that's for the one time, like, hey, I'm going here to there, A to B, and I don't want to deal with this bullshit. So,
right.
You're laying it out.
Yeah. You wouldn't actually have to carry anything on yourself, or you could just have it on a card or something. I don't know. You just have a password, right? An account?
Yeah, I don't even know how it works, but I'm sure there's a way to not physically carry anything. Like, you memorize it or save it on your, you know, some drive somewhere and access it from somewhere else.
Right. Anyway, we're looking at that.
So this is the list of things that get stolen at customs bit. So we spent about 20 minutes on that.
That's right. Because a lot of this podcast is just things that make Robert angry. So
I did say it was the Robert Show.
This is the Robert Show. This episode is featuring the Robert Show. So, So I don't like theft. I don't like violence. So I get upset about that kind of stuff. And yes, there's no context, but I dare you to provide context for some of those things and to explain away how anybody would be justified in just stealing that stuff.
I remember probably more than 10 years ago now seeing lists of items that were confiscated from the Canadian border. Like, for whatever reason, they have to make a list, right?
Yeah.
And publish it. And the focus of the story at the time was, like, look at all this counterfeit or porn or whatever, right? It was all DVDs and VHS tapes of porn that were confiscated, and it had to list the titles of them all. And so it was, like, kind of a kick to read through the list because you see all this ridiculous shit.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, when we went to Colorado that one time back in college, and
Oh,
we
yeah.
called up some local video store, and I guess I was the point guy, right? I had to talk
You
to
were
the
on the
phone. I
phone,
was like,
yeah. And you asked them
"Hey,
to, what was it? You listened to the most popular ones? Tell them, right?
Yeah," I was like, "Hey, what are your top five titles? You know, what's renting real well right now?" And he'd say one,
Yeah.
and I'd try to repeat it, and I got through like the first two or three, and I just couldn't keep a straight face anymore. I had to hang up.
Yeah, there. You got to hand it to porn makers. They come up with some really funny stuff.
Indeed, they do, and
Yeah.
I, you know, it's voluntary, right? People want to do it. People want to consume it. People want to participate in it. Totally fine.
Yeah. Unless you're not filming it, in which case you'll go to jail for some reason.
Oh right, yeah. Because then it's not porn, then it's prostitution.
That's right. But if you're filming it, it's art. And it's covered by the First Amendment or something like that, freedom of speech, and it's all good. But if you're
Yeah, so
not.
what's weird about that, it's paradoxical because it's like, all right, do it with no evidence or do it with evidence and you're off.
And just because of the insanity of government. That makes no sense. There's no principles behind it ever. And yeah. As
Yeah,
if,
well,
you
hey, I
know.
just want to point out one more thing about this current show. This is Friday, and this is the day that we post shows, so this is another timely episode. Not that anything we're talking about is timely, but I'm just alluding to the, you know, time that we're recording it and the time that it'll be posted. So, hey, people listening,
Look
you're
at us.
almost with
We're
us.
doing it. I had a thought. Is it, wouldn't that be, so let's say that the most attractive people who have sex for money would get jobs in the porn industry, but those that are less attractive to the porn industry want to have sex for money, they'd be relegated to prostitution status. So it's kind of a barrier to entry, or like kind of a discriminating against the less attractive, these prostitution laws. You follow me on this one?
I do, except human nature seems to suggest that there are appetites for all types.
Agreed. Which would think that there would be, yeah, a wide, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a wide variety of porn out there that caters to all tastes. And you don't necessarily have to be the most attractive person. But, I mean, I'm just trying to get into the head of some bureaucrat who says that it's okay to have sex for money as long as it's being filmed. But it's not okay if it isn't being filmed.
Well, they're not being paid for the sect itself, they're being paid to be a star in a film. Different.
Totally different.
Well,
Totally different, Daniel. You're so right about that. They're not having sex on camera for money. They're starring in a movie. There happens to be sex in it. Totally different.
I
Right.
wonder if they said on camera, I am being paid for sex, if they
No, I
would
don't
then
think
be
it has.
charged with prostitution.
Well, on a porno film set, there are people that are not on film that are involved in sexual acts. There are fluffers who are women, or I suppose men. Whose job it is off camera to keep the male stars aroused. So, and they're
You know a
obviously not
bit too
getting
much about
arrested.
this, Robert.
No, I'm an expert. You can ask me any question. I know everything about the porn industry. Except there was a trying to identify this person at that last trivia contest I went to, and it was a picture of current day Jenna Jameson, and I had no idea who it was.
Oh,
She
yeah?
looked she looked she looked like she'd had a rough life, and I did not
Yeah.
recognize her. So, anyway.
You know, I don't even think I've ever seen what she looked like. But she was like a porn star in the 90s, I want to say.
Yeah, 80s or 90s, I think. I don't know. But yeah, it's a while ago. And now she's not looking super great. But, it's, you know, she's an older woman now. She can't look 100% awesome. But I don't know. It wasn't a flattering picture either. Anyway, just the hypocrisy and the seemingly arbitrary, random nature of government laws, you'd think that there would be some sort of principle behind it, but there never is.
No, and whatever you know, reason du jour, like however they name the bill or law, has some allusion to, you know, some principle or some kind of like noble ideal, but it's always the opposite that it actually
Yeah.
accomplishes, you know.
Oh yeah, they claim they're going to make, you know, prostitution illegal to, you know, protect the women, as if by making, let's say, you know, child work laws illegal, protect children. You're preventing them from working, which is preventing them from eating. So I would argue that it's not protecting them.
Right, yeah. So there's laws against them working as children, so then they have to become prostitutes in some instances, and then there's laws against them being prostitutes, so that makes it go underground and be more dangerous. You know, you can't be open about it. You got to sneak around. And so then, you know, it's a lot easier for somebody to like take advantage of a situation like that versus being out in the open, which, harkening back to our previous episode, is why the mafia doesn't go to government for their dispute resolution. You know, similarly,
absolutely,
drug dealers and prostitutes and whatnot, they can't go to government and say, hey, this guy defrauded me, or this person did this to me, because the act itself is quote-unquote illegal, thus
right,
making it more dangerous to engage in. If it were totally legit, and that then normal, you know, non-aggression principle type natural law stuff would be enforceable, then a lot of the dangers that go along with these things would be eliminated.
Absolutely, and you can see that in places where prostitution is legal. There are, like, bunny ranches in Nevada, and those aren't exactly hotbeds of criminal activity. You see that wherever. And, yeah, like you said, the mafia and gangs and that sort of thing that are engaging in drugs or prostitution or what have you can't go to, quote-unquote, legal ways to resolve disputes. So they're left to their own devices, and they will often solve them with violence. But even when they do, violence is bad for business, and they will more often than not try and solve situations diplomatically. There is a ton of violence all over the world, and a lot of violence is gang-related and whatnot. But it's not like any one gang is constantly always trying to murder somebody else, because it's absolutely bad for business. People would rather not bury their friends, not bury their family members, and they would rather make money.
Yeah, and not put themselves at risk. I mean, once you start engaging in that type of lifestyle,
right,
I'm sure your life expectancy gets a little lower.
Absolutely. So just another way, another one of those hidden costs of government. I don't even know if those deaths probably don't show up in the democide numbers, but they probably should. It's not necessarily
direct. Yeah, they
direct,
absolutely should.
It's
and
not
I
direct,
know
you know,
the
government thug murdering somebody, but it is the root cause of that behavior.
Yeah, you know, we should look into the how they calculate that 250+ million number and see if it does leave out a lot of areas that should be attributed at least partially to
yeah,
government.
I mean, does it count all the deaths the FDA is responsible for?
Right.
Does it count, you know, all, yeah, the criminalizing of voluntary acts? Does it count all those deaths? Probably not.
Or highway deaths. You know, I mean, you
yeah,
can argue that as the owner, quote, unquote, of the road, they have a responsibility for the safety of the road. Just like if you got sick at a restaurant, you'd blame the restaurant owner.
Uh-huh.
And if there was a free market in roads, then there'd be a multitude of different types of roads over time that would become safer and more efficient and faster and cheaper all along. So, you know, the 50 to 60,000 people a year that die on roads would most likely be reduced. Just throwing it out there.
Sure. So I wouldn't be surprised if we calculated out how much they're actually responsible for ultimately, if the number wasn't double what is calculated currently. And I know that 250 million doesn't include acts of war, so it probably should. But I wonder what the actual total number is. It's got to be something horrifically catastrophic.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to contrast that over the amount of people who lived at any point during that time. You know, like, because we know today's population, we know the population at any given time in history, but you kind of have to like run a comparison of all the people who happened to be alive during that entire period versus how many people were murdered by negligence by government or by direct democide over that same period. So you get kind of, you know, the ratio, the scale of it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. The figure of the 250 million comes from a guy at the University of Hawaii, and I don't know his methodology before I look into that, or even his, anyway.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's probably left a few things out, I'd imagine. I mean, you kind of have to at some point.
Right. Because, I mean, I can imagine how difficult it would get to calculate. You know, since a lot of deaths aren't just single issue deaths. I mean, when a coroner files, you know, natural causes on like some 80-year-old death, it's, you know, it's just a general catch-all for any number of things that were wrong with the person.
Right, and it's also one of the reasons why, like a country like Cuba that self-reports their infant mortality rate or whatever, you know, they just classify them as not surviving to birth versus dying after birth, so that keeps their infant mortality rate low.
Nice.
Because I think that was one of the things in the Michael Moore movies, like, oh, look how great their health care is there.
Yeah.
All they're doing is jockeying the numbers around, you know.
Which is what governments do. There's, I was recently watching a video on all the ghost cities in China. And in China, if you're like a government bureaucrat, like a mayor of one of these ghost cities or of the district, you know, a county or whatever, you get like a bonus, like your performance and your income is essentially rated to your, you know, married to your GDP output of your district. Mm. So you'd have all these cities that were reporting insane growth, where you would build all these buildings that weren't necessary. Roads, infrastructure, everything you could imagine, and then report these crazy GDP numbers, like 20% growth in a year. And so then
they're paid based on how much money they waste? That's awesome.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah. Oh yeah, awesome for them. Absolutely. Which just shows you what, you know, kind of a crony Ponzi scheme government is and can be. So these bureaucrats were, you know, making all this money, wasting and burning all this money, creating. The video said that there were over 50 ghost cities, and they defined a ghost city by being like, I forget what it was, but it was something around 15 to 20%, I want to say, occupancy. So they've got these cities that can hold, you know, millions of people, and there's only a few hundred thousand living there, maybe. And I could be wrong on those numbers. Don't quote me, but it's something like that. I mean, they showed all these just empty streets, and they talked about having enough infrastructure in, like, apartment buildings and, you know, rooms and whatever, housing for, like, 3 billion people to live. So it's, you know, double what they currently have. 3 million more people. Yeah, they currently have like 1.2, 1.3 billion people. And they said they have enough like housing for 3 million more, 3 billion more people. So like 4.5 billion. So they've got so much empty, and they have like a one child policy. I don't know if they've come back on that. I think they might have come back on the one child policy, but they really need to institute like a 7 child policy to like fill up all this empty space.
All right. So what's weird to me is I think I've seen stories where Chinese people buying housing is very expensive. Like in Shenzhen, which is a really big city on the coast, and there's a lot of manufacturing there, this new apartment building opened up where there were, or condo, where the units were like, I want to say under 100 square feet. And they
100
sold.
100 square feet? What?
Yeah. And
so
they sold
shoebox.
For $132,000 each.
No.
So
what?
That doesn't add up to me. Like, how can some place have such a shortage where, like, this little sleeping apartment sells for $130,000?
Well,
everyone complains about how Chinese wages are so low, like slave wages. Mm-hmm. How are people affording even that?
Okay, so from what the video I saw said, you've got all these people where, you know, going where the jobs are. So you're in, like, you know, name that big city. What's the capital?
Okay, so all the manufacturing cities have a housing crunch. Everyone's going
there.
So
they're all kind of living like in the suburbs around these cities.
They've overbuilt in areas where people don't want to be. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they have overbuilt. Like imagine if somebody just built New York City in eastern Washington, just randomly.
Or the middle of Kansas or something, right?
Yeah, in the middle of Kansas, all of a sudden somebody plants down a metropolis. Why would anybody go there? There are no jobs there. Nobody's there. I mean, there's a temporary job boom while all the construction workers are working and, you know, all the people getting the material there and whatnot. But then once that's there, there's no incentive for all those people to just massively go there. It's not like there's a natural, like, trade route or anything like that.
Well, didn't Las Vegas kind of come up like that? I mean, it was just a desert,
kinda,
and they just decided.
Kind of, that was all built on the laws of government, making it illegal to gamble elsewhere.
Okay, there you go.
A good friend of ours is currently in Omaha, Nebraska. And right next door to Omaha, Nebraska is Iowa. And I forget the name of the little city, but right across the Missouri River, there are all these casinos.
Council Bluffs.
There you go. All these casinos. All these casinos just sprouting up right on the border. Because, of course, there are laws against it being in Nebraska. So, yeah, so there's no, I mean, it's not like if the Chinese government tomorrow made it illegal, you know, to do X, Y, and Z anywhere but in these Chinese ghost cities, all of a sudden people would have some artificial incentive to go there. But as it is, they haven't done that, nor should they, have ever built this crap in the first place. But it just goes to show the massive inefficiency and waste in an effort to game their GDP system and game their currency and all that business. So it's hard for a status to defend this, I would think. I can't imagine. I don't know. It's all so horrific to me. All that money and stuff could have been spent way better by their own people, their own money. It's like, you know, the parable of the, was it the candle maker? I forget. Like the idea of the guy that goes out and breaks all the windows.
Oh, that's Bastiat, broken window fallacy, like break the window
Yeah.
and then Glazer has money to spend on buying suits and the suit guy
Right.
can buy shoes and blah, 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 makes the economy better. It's a Keynesian fallacy.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Keynesian idea that you could just spend all this government money and create these cities and how wonderful it is, when in reality it's just this massive waste. And in the time that it's taking for, you know, the Chinese population to catch up with all this infrastructure growth, these buildings aren't going to last forever.
Yeah, I've seen them like collapsing in stories, right? Like before they're even occupied.
I haven't seen that, but I imagine if it's not happening now, it'll happen in the future because it'll be decades, if it ever happens, before these things get settled up. So in the meantime, who's taking care of these things?
So is this an example of misallocation? Because like I was saying, in Shenzhen, they're renting these less than 100 square foot apartments. I think they're like 64 square feet, which is probably smaller than a prison cell. And
yeah.
So that tells you that in that particular area, there's a very high demand and a low supply, hence a high price and certain, I don't know, like things that people will put up with to live there, right? Like they'll deal with a very small unit so that they can be there. But then
yeah.
On the other hand, you're saying that there's these areas where there are just, you know, buildings upon buildings upon buildings just empty and available, and they should be cheap and affordable and abundant.
But they're not.
They're just
they're,
in like
they're high
terrible
priced.
Areas that no one wants to be.
Right.
Wait, wait,
they're high
say that
priced.
again?
There's no jobs. There's some metric, I think, where the people in like Beijing get paid like 10 times what you get paid out in the country. So the people
Wait,
that,
wait, wait. Back up, back up, back up. Did you just say that these empty ghost cities are not cheap?
As far as I understand it, correct.
So
they're way
they
out of
have
the price range.
Empty places, empty places, and they're not lowering the price to fill them up.
Right. As far as I understand, that might be not entirely true, but it looks like the government is trying to get, you know, money back on their return or their investment or whatever, and that they are keeping them at market, you know, above market price, because otherwise, right, people would move in, wouldn't they?
Well, assuming that there was a reason to, like, I mean, the reason I moved to where I live is because the price was cheap enough. You know, I happen to live out in BFE,
yeah,
in a way, but it was cheap enough so I could afford it.
Right, but these are, yeah, you. I don't, I'm pretty sure, and I'm not, I'm just going off the top of my head and from one video I watched, pretty sure that these are not BFE prices. You'd be moving at the BFE with, you know, you're talking about no movie theater, no bus stations, no, you know, none of that infrastructure, just empty cities. It'd be like moving to New York City, and then you'd have to walk everywhere. There wouldn't be restaurants to go to. There might be maybe a small, tiny little supermarket. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like nothing is
yeah.
filled. There's nothing there. So, and on top of that, yeah, the prices are not low to incentivize people to actually go there. So
yeah, interesting. I've heard that there's ghost malls as well, but if there's no restaurants or stores there, then I guess they're just empty spaces still. So, you know, still not a draw.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ghost malls all across America. Saw yeah an article of that recently. And a lot of them getting knocked down, but a lot of them are still just gaping, empty things. But at least that's private money for the most part, right?
Yeah, well, I was talking about the Chinese ones, but yeah, I mean, even in the U.S., it does seem like malls are a thing of the past or about to be.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's an outdated model, honestly.
Yeah. You know, I was recently actually in an Amazon fulfillment warehouse where they have robots operating a lot of the product movement, and it is amazing. I mean, seeing what they're doing in there, you wonder why anyone would shop in a mall or physically go to a store and like compare prices against, you know, oh, I'm gonna go to this store over here and then check out the other store across town and see if I'm getting the best deal. When
yeah.
you can just go online and be like, all
right,
know
in 5 minutes at the most,
check
yeah.
five different sites and boom, I'm done. And oh, Amazon is a little bit more maybe, but it'll get here like tomorrow and I don't have to drive and go, you
yep.
know, physically deal with shit, which brings up an interesting story I saw recently about Sears and Kmart merged a few years ago, and both of them were at one time the biggest retailer in the world because they, like, outdated or outmoded the previous model, and then they combined to, like, try to salvage themselves.
Uh-huh.
But I was at Kmart maybe 6 months ago, and this was corroborated by the story I read. It took us 45 minutes to check out to buy like three or four items. I mean, you literally have to beg them
yeah.
to take your
money.
Like, please, I just want to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Well, every time I've been to like a Walmart, you know, when I was working for friends to try and buy something, and you know, I had too many items, or like the self checkouts were, you know, shut down or whatever, it would be like, yeah, you'd be sitting in line and maybe one or two people ahead of you, and it would still take half an hour, and you're just banging your head against the wall.
Right, Walmart and Target and Costco are actually pretty good about it. I mean, you sort of expect it at Costco because people are like loading up. But try Kmart, man. Try like buying two items at Kmart, like physically, like go there. Or Sears. Try to get anyone to help you. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, Sears, I don't even know if there's a whole lot of Sears left. And I don't know if there's a whole lot of Kmart left. I know there's one where I used to live. But it's funny, you mentioned that this came up. There's an article today about an interview with a Costco guy, one of the top, I think the CFO of Costco, who was detailing like their earnings report or whatever. And somebody asked him if they thought they were future-proof or Amazon-proof. And he was like, no, not even close. Are you kidding me? We got to work our butts off to compete with these guys because they're killing it.
Yeah. You know, I saw something the other day on the same line. The biggest seller of Costco products is not Costco.
Really?
Amazon.
That's crazy.
So, like, the Costco-branded products, they're Kirkland Signature. It's like the diapers and the baby wipes and, you know, they make a bunch of stuff, right?
Right.
Costco.com sells it. Costco physically sells it. And, well, I think it must be online sales is the deal. Amazon sells more than Costco.com of Costco's brand.
Okay. That's a little more reasonable.
Yeah. I imagine if you counted, like, physical sales, like, people would have to buy them from Costco to sell them on Amazon. So that would count, like, sort of double. You know?
Yeah.
They count in both categories, so I don't think that would be legit.
Right.
But yeah, they sell more Kirkland Signature on Amazon than on Costco.com.
I got to say, you know, Amazon, their site is really, really good. The fact that you know, they're secure, you feel confident buying from Amazon, you expect the product to beat their shipping estimates. You can basically just, like, click a few buttons and you're done. It's such an amazing customer service experience compared to, oh, I'm going to get dressed, I'm going to get in the car, I'm going to drive to town, I'm going to go to one store, fight traffic, walk around the shop, pick it up, on and on and on. Yeah,
especially if you live
break
like,
it down
far
like that,
away
it gets ridiculous.
From a store. Especially if you live far away from a store, right? It's like
yeah.
a big to-do, you know? And,
it would be a big
you know, the other thing with Amazon is we're on this monthly thing, like the subscribing thing. So we get a bunch of items just sent to us at the end of the month. And it comes in a bunch of big boxes, and if you get enough items, you save 15%. So not only are we not having to go in the car and go and, like, find all this shit, it just shows up, and we're saving money.
You're talking about things that you use anyway, that you use on
yeah.
a monthly basis? So you're just getting restocked, essentially, at the end of the month?
Yeah, it's, you know, diapers and baby wipes and, you know, coffee and snacks and stuff that, you know, the kids
right.
like, and we know that they like it, so we just keep getting it.
But you can, it's an a la carte kind of thing where you can throw things in that basket if you want or not, or take it out if you don't want them anymore?
Yeah, totally. And you have until a certain date within the month to change the order, or
the
you can skip
of,
a month.
That's...
Like say, oh, we've got enough diapers right now, so we're going to skip until next month. And it's just one button push, and you say, okay, move to the next month. It's great. So, you know,
yeah.
hey, if this sounds enticing to anyone who's not familiar with this, you've been living under a rock for the last 5 years, click on that Amazon link on the readrothbard.com site. Do the subscribe and save some money, enjoy some great benefits, and we'll get a little kicker. So, you know, all that good shit.
Yeah, if you could support the show, that'd be fantastic. We'd love it.
So I feel like we've talked about two or three, maybe four now, different topics. Should we start winding down? What do you say?
Yeah,
I think we've nailed it.
I think we did a good job. I can't really think of a whole lot else to talk about. I kind of flubbed my way through a lot of content. I'm sure I could go back and fact-check this episode and fix a couple of things I said. But hopefully the spirit of what I said is fairly accurate. But, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it so far, and I think that having you carry it is really good. In fact, I think the last 20 episodes you've basically been carrying it, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
As I fumble my way through anarchist philosophy. Good.
Well, it's amazing where you're at with what I would imagine is not nearly as much reading and listening that I've done. I feel like you've got a grasp of it better than I do, and I feel like I put a lot of effort into it. So if it comes naturally to you, that's awesome.
I think I've been an anarchist my whole life, honestly. I just didn't know it. I think from the get-go, when someone would tell me what to do, my little brain would go, why? Can you give me a good answer to the question, why? I'm fairly intelligent. I think I got a pretty good grasp on what I should be doing. Why should I do this thing that you're telling me to do? I think I had a very innate sense of I'm the best person to decide what I should do. And I think that's pretty much the heart of libertarian philosophy, self-ownership. And, so I think I kind of had a head start on the whole thing in that sense. I think early on, I was never much for patriotism or even tribalism. I remember back in the day, I don't know if you did this or not, but I was never one for even like school spirit type stuff. I remember back in like school, like you'd have an assembly and people would be getting standing up and cheering and I'd just be sitting there, because the assemblies were all about how we were great and how the other people were bad or not as good and how we were going to beat you and blah, blah, blah. And it's one thing to say you want to be good at a thing. I have no problem with that. But to arbitrarily decide that somebody other than you is bad for the reason that they live somewhere else goes along with that us versus them status mentality that I've always hated that crap.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've kind of felt as well throughout my growing up in life. Like I never felt right doing the Pledge of Allegiance. I never felt good doing the assembly thing, or at a football game cheering or whatever. I was in the band, so I'd play songs, but I would never like get into the tribalism, like you were saying. It just never felt right. It always felt weird. It felt like I accidentally happened to live in this town and happened to go to this school, and so why should I be super excited about that versus the other people or whatever?
Right. Yeah, I seem to associate. I mean, I don't know if I innately associated it with. I mean, I do now, but it seems to be that same kind of mentality that enables war and that whole other people are bad and we're good and it's okay if we attack them because reasons, because they're bad. And
you dehumanize them, right? They're not humans.
Yeah, you dehumanize them.
Yeah.
Right, they're not people. They're not human beings. You can just destroy them. They're animals. So, and that just led to all kinds of, obviously atrocities and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I think we should wrap this up. Like I was saying, do you have any updates on where you're at? You were saying that you're probably going to stay where you're at through the winter. Are you still writing, or is it more of an editing process now? Are you like, do you have the story like fleshed out and now you're just like refining?
I will be staying here through the winter, even if I finish the book, before next spring, which I plan on doing. I'll still be here just because traveling through the winter doesn't sound like a super great proposition. But the book is actually, I'm really happy with my progress lately on the book. Right now, I am just plowing through it, going start to finish, instead of writing a little bit here and there. And really, really happy with what I'm doing. I would say that I've already built the frame of the car, and now I'm like applying the details. Like I've got the skeleton, and I'm maybe putting on a little bit of the muscle and the definition and that sort of thing in the skin. There's still some meat I'm putting on, but it's mostly finalizing details. So, great. I'm really happy with it. I'd say the first couple chapters are all pretty much first draft form and could be read. Not that I'm going to send them out to anybody just yet, but they're in a state where they could be read.
Well, that's good. It's awesome that you're making progress and it feels like you're getting something accomplished. I know that it was a big leap of faith for you to quit the life that you had and make a change and try to focus on something that you thought was important.
Yeah, it's a big risk, a big gamble, but at the end of the day, it'll be, it's a year of my life, and it's a year of my life that I'm willing to trade. It's not like I'm having a horrible time doing it. I'm actually enjoying it, so I'll be another year behind if this doesn't work out, but I really believe in what I'm doing, so it's worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and behind, I'd ask, behind what? If you had stayed at your previous job, you'd just be another year in, right?
Right. No, yeah, you're right. You're right. In my previous chat, there's no, yeah.
I
wasn't like I was building up any kind of a, right.
No, I mean, this is one of those things that I'm hoping to instill in my girls is, you don't need to do the traditional progress. I don't expect them to ever go to college unless they want to do some specific thing that requires very extensive training. I fully expect them to be thinking in entrepreneurial terms in a short time. I mean, they're 3 and 1, and I'm hoping that they start seeing, you know, before they're even 10, like how to assess the situation and see if there's a problem or a need that needs to be fulfilled and try to figure out a way to solve it and be able to market it and solve problems for people. And that's what I want to instill in them. I'm trying to instill it myself now. As a 38-year-old guy, I'm trying to get that back. You know, I think that was taken from me in the formal schooling system. I mean, I think that I think it's a Murray quote. You know, we shouldn't measure a person's education by the amount of schooling they've had.
That's well said, Murray.
Yeah, I'll see if it. I there's no way I can find that clip. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna like find some meme and post it below. Finding clips from Murray is really hard. There's so much content.
There's too much content, but we should mention, should we mention that that meme you sent me the other day? It was so genius. It was just like the ultimate evolution of the meme of meme, just a meme in general. It was, it worked on so, I mean, it was just so perfect. I've seen good memes
before. Talk about it.
So hopefully everybody who listens to this is familiar with the movie Office Space.
Spoilers.
So there's,
Spoilers. We should have said that at the beginning of the film or the show.
I don't know what you just said. I can't hear you.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Okay, anyway, so in Office Space, there's this company that's getting, like, downsized. And a company is hired and brought in to do the downsizing. And the two guys that come into the office to do the downsizing are the Bobs. And there's a scene where the Bobs are interviewing, like, a salesman, I want to say. I forget exactly what his job is.
Milton, I think he's in accounting or something. Or no, wait, no. It's an error in accounting that he's still employed. I don't know what he does.
No, it was an error in accounting that kept the staple guy from getting fired.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they're talking not to Milton. They're talking to
Rob. They're talking to the other guy. They're talking to a guy that is like a liaison, a go-between guy. I forget his name, the character's name.
No, they are talking to Milton. In this clip, they are talking to Milton because he gets all angry about them not being people, whatever.
Right, but that's not Milton. That's not the Stapler Milton guy.
Yeah, it is.
No, you're confusing two different guys.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I can see.
Milton looks a little bit different. I mean, they're both.
It's the guy
who
gets angry
guys.
And fired
up.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so he's like kind of like this liaison guy that talks to, who was like a software. He's basically saying that software engineers can't talk to salespeople or whatever it was, or the customer.
Right.
So he's like this go-between. And so the meme is, and I'll just kind of describe it. So the Bobs are talking to this character. And he's basically just this go-between guy. And so the Bobs go, so what government does is it physically builds the roads? And the guy goes, oh, no, private construction companies do that. So he's like, do you build the software? And he's like, no, the engineers build the software. So then, well, then, does government must physically pay for the roads? No, the taxpayers pay for the roads. Well, then I must ask, why don't the taxpayers directly pay the construction companies? Well, I'll tell you why, because taxpayers are not good at dealing with companies. So he had this character that was essentially justified his entire existence saying that software engineers were incapable of dealing with customers, which is essentially the government argument saying the taxpayers just couldn't figure out a way to deal with a road construction company. Therefore, we need government to be basically the money drain, the inefficient money drain to build the roads. It is genius.
Yeah.
If we could have a link for that in the show notes, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I will put that one down below. As we're talking on equipment and computers and things supplied by private companies, cause how would we ever have these things if we couldn't communicate with a mediary in between us and the company providing it.
Right. Got to have a middleman, or else how could we get things done? Yeah, it's a really
good
argument.
Well, good stuff, sir. Well, post this below, and I don't know, let's, like I said, wrap it up. Wrap it up. Well, we're playing the Oscar End Your Speech music, right? Is that what they do? They start playing the walk-off
music?
Yeah,
the wrap-it-up music, the get-off-the-stage music?
Yeah. You'll wrap it up, B.
Yeah, so we've been the Read Rothbard podcast. I don't know, what is this, like episode 21 or something like that? This is
episode 20, but the 21st episode.
So there's some creative accounting going on by Daniel here.
Well, the Special Olympics, we had that.
Oh,
I didn't have a number.
Right. Didn't have a number. Okay. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. This is our 21st episode, and we talked about Civil War and maybe we'll talk about some more Marvel stuff in the future. Although I think this is our most like libertarian type, ANCAP type of content. I mean, maybe there are some issues that'll pop up in future stuff, but I mean, who knows? It's comic books. What can happen? But yeah, we talked about that. We talked about Minority Report. We talked about China. And yeah, it's a good one. Daniel, where can people find us?
Well, all they got to do is point their internet communicating middleman device to www.readrothbart.com, where they will find articles, books, lectures, this podcast, a bunch of other interesting things that I've been finding over time, posting there. We're going to start doing some other cool stuff. I can't quite say exactly yet what that's going to be, but it will be awesome. I got some ideas. And so readrothbart.com. Check it out.
Do it.
Oh, and as an aside, I just want to throw in there that the Tom Woods issue that we may have mentioned in our previous podcast, and if not, I will cut this part out. But it got resolved, and he made it right, and PayPal made it right. We adjudicated the situation in a non-government court. We figured it out. PayPal favored me in the dispute with the scammer, and Tom got his money, and I got my money, and everything's good.
Wait, how did you both get money?
So, a little background. I support the Tom Woods show, tomwoods.com.
Never heard of it.
And in an effort to support him monetarily, I went to his supportinglisteners.com website. And it literally is supportinglisteners.com. So if you like Tom Woods, go there. And there's varying levels of support, and you get different perks and benefits if you support him at various price levels. And I opted for the highest price level. And the first time I attempted to do this, it went through PayPal, and it had like this weird Chinese characters showing up in the page. And I was like, well, this is weird. So I screenshotted it, and I sent it to the support person for Tom. And I was like, hey, this looks weird. What do I do? You know, should I just proceed or what? And they responded, oh, yeah, sometimes it does that. You know, just go ahead. Turns out that someone had hijacked their page and was siphoning off money. So it wouldn't pay Tom. It would pay some Chinese address. And so this happened to me. And then I let Tom and his assistant know about it. And they were like, oh, you know, let's try to figure this out. Do a dispute with PayPal. And if they don't make it right, you know, we'll figure something out. And it took a couple of weeks. But I did two different types of disputes with PayPal. The first one they denied because I actually did authorize it. And the first dispute was an unauthorized charge. So then I changed it to a non-delivery of service. So basically, hey, I did authorize the charge. I paid for something, but I didn't get it. And so that took like 2 weeks, and they finally came back and said, we, you know, decide in your favor. Here's your $500 back. And as soon
so
as I got that,
your money back, and then you went ahead and gave it to Tom?
Right, because that was my original intention.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the benefit that Tom and his assistant provided me was rather than the just the benefits of paying the first time, they gave me the lifetime membership, which is what you get if you pay a second time. So,
ooh,
like, it's $500 a year, and during that year, you get access to their Liberty Classroom, which we're an affiliate of, so sign up for that, folks. But after a year, if you sign up again to support them, then you get a lifetime membership.
Fancy.
So I got that already, like, due to my troubles or whatever. And I'm also signed up for his promotional thing, so he'll push our website when we ask. So we're working up to that. We got to make sure we got enough good content and enough good reason for people to come see us. And we're trying. We're trying our best. We're doing the show. We're curating content for the site. But I don't know if we're ready for Tom's audience because he's got like 75,000 or 100,000 people on his list. But when we're ready, I'm hoping that we can either leverage that into an email blast from him pushing the readrothbart.com site or perhaps an interview with him. That would be my ideal goal, is to be able to have a conversation with him because he's great. He's so knowledgeable and amazing in what he knows about history and economics and libertarian theory. And I don't know what he'd do wasting his time talking to a couple of schlubs like us, but I think it would be great.
Who knows? Because we're paying him too.
Free market, baby.
So he's a prostitute. It's fine.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep. Since he's filming it and he's recording it, right? Art.
Totally legit. Film it, record it, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so hopefully I can sway him to do that and help push the site. And we've got good ideas to post out there. And Robert's book's coming up, and that'll be another thing that we're going to be promoting. And yeah, it's just been gravy so far. I mean, not that we've had any actual like visualized or realized comments, feedback, support, or anything, but we feel good about what we're doing.
Yeah, I, you know, feel good. Even if it's we're screaming into the darkness, into the void, I still feel good about what we're doing. I'm getting something out of it, Daniel. Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, 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 doot.